All right, so it's Lola and Robbie. So this topic is a much heavier topic. It's the topic of suicide. And I want to give a quick warning that I'm going to ask some questions that may seem harsh, may seem cold. I do not mean that. I just that some of the questions I have, I believe a lot of people have when it comes
Absolutely.
To suicide. And I will say this also. I've never, when I was younger, I heard about suicide.
Mm-hmm.
And it usually was someone famous or whatever. And now at this age, I know one person personally, a friend of mine took his own life years ago. And I have two people that I know that they had someone very close to them took the end. And then you hear about this.
Yeah.
And it's people my friend, I had no clue. No clue.
Really?
No clue. And that's, yeah, I also want to make sure we talk about that. Because the first thing you do is you feel a little guilty. How did I not know? If I would have known, what could I have done? But Lola, first of all, has there been a raise or an uptick in suicides in the last, I don't know, 10 years, 15?
Yes. It's become more prevalent in society. And thankfully, along with the uptick of prevalence in actual occurrences of suicide, there has been a prevalence of an increase in resources, knowledge, and dialogue about suicide and suicidal ideation. And I think that was missing before.
Okay.
Yeah.
First of all, I do want to touch on this up front because I'm going to forget. In some countries, that is something that is offered, isn't it? Isn't
mm-hmm.
it? So if you're not facing death because of a disease,
mm-hmm.
you're just not happy in life and you think you want to take your own life, there are some countries that will offer an assistance to suicide?
Right. There are places around the world that offer assistance to this. And of course, that would be very controversial here in
yeah.
the States.
Yeah.
But when a person starts to experience suicidal ideation, it is meant to be an emergency red flag for that individual. Now, of course, for them, for most people, they only recognize that they're in a great deal of distress. But what suicidal ideation indicates is that the distress is so great that you are to a breaking point where you really want significant change. You want something to be very different. You want something to go away and never be what it is today. And for a lot of people, though, that results in killing themselves when really what they need is a change of a situation. They need a certain situation to die away.
Yeah, excellent point. Do they have an idea, just your field, do they have an idea of why people are going towards suicide? Why there are more suicides today?
Well, because with today, people feel more disconnected than ever. And I know that's odd because we have social media. However, the majority of social media, it shows people, you know, thriving, living life, having a good time. And while there are things out there on social media that are very helpful, there are support groups and things that people can take part in that could make them feel more of a part of the community. But largely, people feel alone and isolated.
I can see that. I can definitely see that. I mean, I can see it because when you'll see a bunch of people that will post. First of all, we've talked about this on other. They have their Facebook life,
mm-hmm.
right, which is all this excitement. Them at a party, you know, it seems like they're having the greatest time. Meanwhile, that night, they may have gone home early because they were bored. But, you know, you don't see
mm-hmm.
that in the face. But if you're seeing that, I was just telling this to a friend of mine. When I was in high school, I'd get to school on Monday, and sometimes you'd hear about a party that was going on that I wasn't invited
mm-hmm.
to. You're like, what? But now, if you're not invited to the party, you may see it right there that night.
Live,
yeah.
happening.
Yes.
Yeah.
And I can see that being a negative. Okay, so that's part of it. Is there anything else?
I think people are largely ashamed when they feel that despondent. They may reach out for help, but sometimes the help doesn't fall on listening ears. And then there's still a stigma. Even with the increase of people seeking mental health care, there are people with mental health professionals actively in their life, and there's still a stigma around suicidal ideation. There's still a stigma around being significantly, clinically, medically depressed.
Yeah. And I can absolutely see that. Because if I'm working with someone in the office, we found out that Jane is going to a psychologist. Yeah, then
mm-hmm.
you immediately look at them differently. And it's amazing how many people go and speak. I never realized, you know, you talk to friends, oh yeah, no, I go to a psychologist or a psychiatrist or, but I have friends that go on a regular basis and mm-hmm. I never knew.
Yeah, therapy is essential. Therapy is essential for everyone. And you don't have to be depressed or having a problem to seek therapy. It's just a great form of self-care. It's a great form of self-care to disengage from the world at large and give yourself an hour of attention. An hour of attention to kind of take an inventory on where your life is, where you want it to be, and how it's working. And for a lot of people, they come to therapy, they do those things, but they put pressure on themselves to try and be on. And that's always a negative. You want people to come to therapy and know that it's a safe place. There is nothing that you can tell the therapist that they don't want to hear or that they're going to judge you on. And for therapists, we have to be really keen and tuned in to even see suicidal ideation, because not everyone is going to walk through the door and say, you know what, I've really been feeling suicidal. You have to ask the right questions, which one of those questions is, have you had any thoughts of harming yourself?
Yeah, yeah. Well, okay, so that leads to my next question. Two questions, I'm going to say them both before I forget.
Mm-hmm.
You're a friend like me. I had no clue about my friend, none. Are there any signs? And I know that's a huge question. And the second thing is, but answer the first one, when you do see signs, what do you do as a friend? I've had, again, my friend, he was worried about a couple of things he was worried about, but, and I thought he was overly worrying about it, but I just mm-hmm. thought he was overly worrying. So are there any signs? And I know that's I'm looking for a simple answer.
Right. That's a big question, because for many, many decades, there was a list of signs that professionals would give out and say, oh, are they giving away their personal belongings, and have they started to withdraw from people that they are usually around? And all of those things could be signs, but research has shown that lots of people that commit suicide go from living active, seemingly happy lives to being deceased because they have died from suicide.
Wow.
And that just goes to show that there's no one formula. There is no one sign, because a person can look like they have it all on the outside, but something internally is really, really hurting and wounded. And so it's really difficult to determine signs. Okay. Now, it's easier to say what are signs of someone being very despondent or disturbed. And the reason I use the word disturbed is because not everyone that kills themselves is depressed.
What?
Sometimes really? People can kill themselves just because they have decided that they're unhappy with the life that they're living. They could have a mental illness that doesn't even include depression as part of it, that makes them feel like they are compelled to do something to themselves,
wow.
to self-harm. And suicidal ideation doesn't look just one way. Because if someone were to ask me, what's the difference between someone taking a gun to their temple and pulling the trigger versus drinking over the course of 10 or 20 years to the point of intoxication and getting behind a car, I'd say there is no difference.
Really? Really?
Yeah.
There is no difference, but Lola. So you're saying, so the person who's drinking because they're sad, depressed, or what, mm-hmm. or something else,
mm-hmm.
but they're hiding, they're drinking to hide something, or
they're drinking to escape, and they may be drinking to end their life.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow. So as a friend or a family member, it can be very hard. You would have no clue in some cases. And
lots of times people would have no clue. I have a friend whose daughter ended up committing suicide. And I warned this friend, just because of things that I saw, behaviors that I saw in her daughter. And she's like, no, she doesn't want to hurt herself. And I was like, I know you think that, but this is what I'm seeing and this is what I'm telling you. She may not actively take drugs and overdose, or she may not cut her wrists, but the risky behavior she's engaging in, and just long story short, this is a person that had a chronic illness. They were diabetic, juvenile diabetes.
Okay.
Which for young people, that's really, really tough. Whenever you talk about chronic illness and people in their youth, it's incredibly hard on them. So I think that's something that parents really need to be attentive to, because it's hard for a kid to not feel normal.
Okay.
And feel like their peers. And so her daughter was a young woman coming of age and had started to miss her medication. Miss her medication, stay out all night, that sort of thing. And so I said, look, there's only one of a few things that's going to happen here. I said, so either y'all are going to make it to where she can't leave the house without one of you guys administering her medication to her, or she will be somewhere where she doesn't have it, hasn't taken it, and does not return home, and she may go to sleep and never wake up. And that's exactly what happened.
Wow. So if you are a friend or a parent, I imagine, no, I've never met your friend, but I imagine when you hear that, you want to say, no, that she's not, and forgive me, this is where I say it may be harsh, she's not crazy. She's not going to take her own life. Right.
And that was essentially the idea that they had, but she was going through so many things as far as risky behavior and slipping grades in school and all of that sort of thing. But they didn't connect it.
Okay.
And because I'm a therapist, I felt compelled as a friend to say, hey, I think it's cause for attention, and I've known y'all a while, and she seems really sad. She seems sad about, you know, having diabetes. She seems sad about being different than other people, and she just wants for this to not be the case.
Yeah.
And I know for a lot of people that doesn't sound like suicide, but essentially, if you know that something's keeping you alive and you opt to not take it, that's a decision you've made that you want to die.
That's a good point. That's a good point. All right, so let's talk about if you saw that. Again, you're a professional, but let's say, you know, the average person does see that. They see something, or they hear that their daughter or that says, you know, I don't know if I want to live anymore.
Mm-hmm.
What do you do as a friend or as a family member? What do? You try and offer support, obviously.
You try and offer support, and we have to get really comfortable talking to the people we care about things that we see that concern us. And it can't always just be sadness. What if the person is close to you seems hostile all the time, or erratic, or impulsive? Anything that has to do with mood is very significant, because mood instability is a signal that there's either something wrong intrinsically, or there could be situational or environmental factors that are contributing to the mood instability. So definitely call a person out on that if you see it.
Okay. Go ahead.
Yeah, whether it's you seeing a person be sad, or you seeing a person be too euphoric, or you see a person just making rash decisions in life, whatever. Just being attentive to someone.
And I imagine, though, I'm not at all questioning, but I imagine if you do that, there's a chance that best friend, your daughter, whatever, would get very defensive, and they could actually start an argument, right? I mean, you have to be ready to, okay.
Yeah, you have to be ready to stand firm in what you're going to be saying to them.
And just remind them that you're asking them as a friend or as a loved one, because I love you.
You're my, okay. And letting them know that you love them and that they're really important to you, and you don't want to see anything happen to them.
Yeah.
Because I think a lot of people feel a lot of shame about suicidal ideation, or they don't know when it's time to worry, because they don't know if it's active, or whether it's passive.
Wait, you mean the person who has the friend who's suicidal?
Or? No, the suicidal person themselves. They don't know whether their suicidal ideation oftentimes is active or passive. And by that, what I mean is active suicidal ideation is I've thought that I want to kill myself. And not only have I thought it, but I have a means. I own a gun that's in my possession. I have knives. I've tried it in the past.
Wow.
And yeah, I think I'm ready to try it again. I have a plan and I have means. And so that's cause for immediate medical attention.
Yeah.
Not a therapy session, not anything, but a trip to a psychiatric hospital or an emergency room, which would triage and see what all is going on, but definitely to the psychiatric hospital.
So I imagine, I hear what you're saying, absolutely, but I would imagine if you're, especially if you're someone watching this, mm-hmm. and you've had those thoughts, that's probably, I hope I can, we'll cut this out if I can't keep it. That's probably the last thing you want to do.
For most people, a trip to the psych hospital is the last thing they want to do, which is odd. I really admire those people that come to the conclusion on their own that, you know what, I feel like I need to take some time out. I need to go to the hospital, because I have had that happen before where people are like, you know, I'm uncomfortable with the way I'm feeling and the way my mind is working. Even if they're not completely suicidal yet, they right. recognize that I'm in a danger zone. So for a lot of people, that is very off-putting to say, oh, you're going to have to go into a mental health hospital. But what I like to tell people is that you can show up at any psychiatric hospital and they will assess you on the spot. You'll speak to a therapist, social worker, psychiatrist. You'll be evaluated. If you need to stay, they will admit you, but maybe you're not as bad off as your therapist thinks you are or as you think you are. And if that's the case, they'll give you other alternatives for whatever is the appropriate level of care. So another level of care may be partial hospitalization. And so partial is you go home to your house, but you still report back every day, maybe 4 days a week.
Okay.
Partial hospitalization, intensive outpatient, that sort of thing.
Okay.
And if you are admitted for a residential stay, I say really commit yourself to the process and enjoy it and get the most out of it.
You say hospitalization, what do they do? I mean, is it medication? First of all, some of it, when you say it's an illness,
mm-hmm.
is it an illness in some cases that can be, I hate the word, use the word fixed, but improved with medication?
Absolutely.
And why is that? What is the medication?
Well, and for some people, it may be a one-time thing where they get to this level of depression in life or despondence where they need hospitalization or where they experience thoughts of suicide. For some people, that's going to be a one-time thing. For many others, it's going to be a way of life. For someone with major depressive disorder and a history of self-harm, that may be a person that has to be on medication for the duration of their lifetime, but that's okay. It's okay if it keeps them stable.
Yeah.
For others, they may be on medication for a year or 2 years and be able to successfully wean off of the medication because whatever the reasons for their depression was, those reasons improve and now the depression is over.
Okay.
But that's someone that is not clinically or medically or chemically depressed, because that's all about the brain.
Yeah, you say chemically. So, and that's important for people to understand. If you are feeling this way, or if you have a friend who is going through something, because it's very easy for us to say, and I can say, he's gonna come very harsh, that guy has all the money, he's got plenty of money, he's got a great job, great wife. How is this guy depressed? You know, mm-hmm. just get off your ass, and which that's how we look at it. But we don't, if you have a chemical imbalance in your brain, right, there's nothing.
They can't help it.
Yes. Okay.
And that's what people say over and over again. That's the number one frustration, especially for people that, quote unquote, seem to have it all,
yeah.
is that people around them are not taking their depression yes. serious.
Yeah.
They're like, people look at my life and think I can't be depressed. If I could help feeling this way, I wouldn't feel this way. And for those people, daily life can be a challenge because they may wake up with passive suicidal ideation on a daily basis, like, oh, I wish I weren't here, or, oh, I wish something would, I wish someone would run into me head on and I'd right. die. They may not want to kill themselves. They may not want to be the person responsible for taking their own life. But if something happened to them, they would be okay with it.
Right, right, okay.
And so wow. for people where that's their reality, oftentimes they come to cope with through professional help that to some degree this is something that they live with. However, they recognize when there are increments of increase where they should be very alarmed and then go to the hospital.
Okay. Wow. Okay. Lola, what about the people that are close to someone who took their own life? And let's say you did know the person was mm-hmm. depressed. I imagine this must happen where you know your friend's depressed, maybe not a child, but you know your even a child.
Mm-hmm.
And then you think they're okay, but you're kind of concerned. But you think, you know, if you're really concerned, right, you would stop everything and you'd go there.
Mm-hmm.
But maybe the person's been dealing with this for months or even years, and then they take their own life. The person who's left behind, dealing with the guilt, the sadness is one thing, but dealing with the guilt.
Yeah.
Yeah, so what do you say to that?
The guilt is so toxic, and I would say to anybody dealing with that, you have nothing to feel guilty about. There's nothing you could have done differently at all. Once that decision has been made, it's out of anyone else's hands. And I know people don't like to feel helpless in that regard, but it's the truth. And so guilting yourself is not going to help the situation. All you can do is try to raise awareness. When yeah. you're able and ready, find your voice and talk about your loved one, talk about their struggle, and try and make a difference in the life of anybody else who's out there that it could possibly make a difference to. It's devastating for some families.
Yeah. All right, so what about people who your friend comes to you, or tells, let's put it this way, your friend tells you, because mm-hmm. friends that are close will open up and say, listen, mm-hmm. Lola, I just want you to know I am on depressing medication for depression, because mm-hmm. they'll open up. As the person who's hearing it, a lot of times we're surprised, right? Mm-hmm. We're like, what, you? Why do you need it? You know, mm-hmm. which is probably the wrong reaction, right? What do you say?
But if it's respectful curiosity, it's okay to say, well, what made you feel like you needed that?
Okay. Okay. Again, because I'm thinking about that person mm-hmm. wanting to feel accepted and not wanting to be viewed as crazy. I mean, I don't know how else to put it.
Right.
That.
Oh, and to go back to the question you brought up about what about your job, this, that,
yes.
and the, that's a real concern for people and for no good reason. None whatsoever. What's your job going to say about you if you are a person living with HIV or herpes? They aren't going to know. And so the same thing applies to mental health. How would they know?
Okay, so if you're missing, it's great. So you go there, I go there tonight, and they're going to say, Rob, you need to be, I may be there for a week. What do they tell the job? What happens at that point?
Right, and so the steps that happen then would be leave of absence. And all your employer needs to know is that a healthcare professional is recommended time off from work. And then what happens from there is that paperwork is generated. It goes to your therapist, your psychiatrist, your psychologist, whomever. Okay. Same way if you have a child that has a broken leg that you're going to have to be at home with for 4 weeks taken care of. Same paperwork goes into effect, and you're off from work.
Okay.
But your direct manager, supervisor, anyone, they should not be finding out what's going on unless you tell them.
And that's
because that's a privacy violation.
Privacy violation. What would you recommend? Again, these are just real life questions, Lola. So I'm gone for a month. Now they say, hey, Rob, you ready to go back to work? I go back to work. Everyone's going to ask me, man, where have you been?
What do you want to say?
Yeah, that's okay. I have no idea, but that's your point.
It's up to you.
Okay.
Yeah. It's completely up to you. Since it's a workplace environment, I would say you just tell people I was away for personal reasons. And if there are people at work that you're really close to, chances are maybe you've already reached out to them while you're out and they know what's going on.
Oh, that's a good point.
I do want to tell people, too, that an important resource for them to be able to utilize, it's called EAP, Employee Assistance Program. Most companies have these benefits. And so these benefits allow a person to meet with a therapist, Sometimes they can meet with a nutritionist, dietitian, legal assistance, financial advisor, all of these things under the umbrella of their EAP at no cost to them. It's a benefit that employers offer. It renews on a yearly basis, and it's the kind of thing that you have and you should utilize. Now, with that being said, employee assistance programs, psychotherapy, and counseling, these are for short-term issues that can be solution-focused. So some help is better than none.
Right.
So I would say definitely utilize those. However, know that it's not for management of serious mental illness or a serious issue that is going to have some long-term ramifications going forward.
Okay, but it is a great way to do a start.
It's a great resource to get the ball rolling.
Yeah.
But if you're a person out there experiencing suicidal ideation, I would definitely recommend a few tips. Number one, seek professional help. Immediately seek professional help, because oftentimes so much can be alleviated by just talking about the things that are going wrong or that are really bothering us. You'd be surprised. There's even research that shows that single session therapy is effective.
Wow.
Yeah. Okay, so that's the first thing, seek professional help. And number two, secondly, you want to engage in self-care. So by engaging in self-care, that means things that you are able to control, go ahead and start to focus on those things. Focus on trying to tidy up your surroundings. And I know that sounds really weird and ridiculous to some degree, because if people are suicidal, you're like, what difference could that make? Things that can be easily accomplished can do a lot for the psyche and the spirit. And so just taking inventory of your surroundings and tidying up your home or your room, that can make a difference. And writing down your feelings, journaling, engaging in that sort of thing, that is incredible self-care.
Really?
And nowadays, they have so many magnificent journals out there. They have journals that can be shared between two individuals. So like if you and I want to share a journal together, I'd have one half of it, you'd have the back half, and we would trade back and forth each week, and then we could read what the other person has written if we wanted to, and then talk about things with each other. So it's a way of people really connecting in a world where so many things pull demands on our time. And so that's a good form of self-care too.
Excellent.
Yeah.
Okay.
Going for a walk, just getting out of your head and getting into some surroundings that are serene or beautiful. So whether it's at a park, the zoo, a botanical garden, any of those things. Those are the sorts of things that feed the soul. And so for someone that's experiencing suicidal ideation, it is essential to awaken the soul and try and find fuel for living from other sources.
Wow. Okay.
Okay. Excellent. Number three, develop a support system. That's really important. Now you may say, well, I confided in someone that I'm thinking of killing myself and they weren't very supportive at all. That's okay. You can join an online support forum, call the suicide hotline. That's really effective. I know lots of clients that have utilized those suicide hotlines, and it helps them see another day, and it helps them get to their appointment, and they come to their appointment no longer actively suicidal. And so that's huge. Those people on those hotlines do a phenomenal job. They absolutely do.
Excellent. And Lola, I'm going to stop right here because it's a perfect segue to this question. People are probably wondering, with today, with everything being tracked and everything else, when you call that place, when you go to a hospital, check yourself in, if they want to hold you there, if you go to a hospital and they want to keep you there against your will, can they do that, number one?
It's very rare for individuals to be held against their will.
Okay.
First and foremost, it's a rarity. There are certain instances where a person can be committed if it's been demonstrated already that they're actively a danger to themselves or to someone else. And I'll give you an example of that. So let's say, hypothetically, we'll use you. So let's say that you're at home. It's a regular Thursday night. You have gone to dinner with your girlfriend. You all come home. You get into an argument. It escalates. You storm out of the house. You go get in your car. You come back. And when you come back, the argument continues. You start waving around a knife. And then the next morning you wake up. You're still irate and things are happening. Then that person would have cause to go and try and seek a mental health warrant.
Okay.
And if it's determined that, wow, Rob really is experiencing some sort of a break right now and really needs help and stabilization, then your family member or loved one could get the assistance of getting a mental health warrant that a judge would have to sign off on. Judge would sign the warrant and sheriffs or whomever, law enforcement, would come out to your house, remove you from your home, and transport you to a hospital where you would be held for at least 72 hours.
Okay. Makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
And what about being tracked? Again, I know you're not an expert in technology, but you call the hotline. Are you now on some list that, hey, this person called?
Absolutely not.
Okay.
Absolutely not. I do find that there are states out there that do a phenomenal job of people that are suicidal, and New York would be one of those states because they do have a system of checking in on someone, and so that's really good. So things vary from state to state, but thinking you're going to be on some sort of a list that could somehow be harmful in any way or be found and then everyone knows, no. That's not going to happen. But I will say this, what's the worst that can happen if someone finds out, oh, Lola's suicidal or has been suicidal in the past?
What's the worst? So I'm going to answer from a guy who's, I would say, wow, you know, they look at me like I'm crazy. It's this stigmatism. But what is the actual worst?
There is no worst. The person that deals with suicidal ideation or has attempted suicide before is no different than anyone else out there.
Explain that.
Well, everyone has a capacity to some extent to navigate stressors in their life, but that's different for each individual person. We're all unique. And how I navigate stressors may be different from how you navigate stressors. And if it so happens that I become suicidal, there's no shame in that. I think people really have to start moving away from that stigma and really embracing people that have struggled and giving themselves grace and saying, you know what, that may not be my struggle today. Hope it's never my struggle, but it could be. Because none of us knows what's the straw that's going to break our camel's back.
Oh, that's a good point. That's a good point. And Lola, you were giving a list of things to do.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know if I stopped you on your list.
Yes. Fourth, create a safety plan. So once you're involved with a mental health professional that knows you have a history of self-harm or that you have a history of suicidal ideation, they can help you create a safety plan. What a safety plan is that it's a set protocol that you will complete each and every time you feel suicidal. And so your therapist, your psychiatrist, your psychologist can help you create a safety plan that includes your number one person that's going to be an emergency contact in the event that you're experiencing suicidal ideation.
Okay.
It's going to include a list of, okay, what's the place closest to my home that I can get to or closest to my work where I can go and be evaluated, potentially check myself in? How do I let my therapist know that this is going on? And so it's going to be a whole list. And then it'll also be a list of a few immediate coping skills that you can do. That could be anything from, okay, maybe I've missed some doses of my medication. I've got to take my medication. And I have to remain consistent for 3 days. And if the ideation is still persisting, then I need to follow up with someone. Or that coping skill list could be that, okay, if I'm experiencing suicidal ideation, I go through all the things on my safety plan, but I also have to take 3 days away from work. And whether that's me going into the hospital for 72 hours or just being away from work and attending therapy every single day or attending outpatient, intensive outpatient every single day. Whatever it is, your healthcare provider will help you come up with a safety plan that works for you, but it is essential.
Excellent. Excellent.
And you also want to safeguard your environment. If you own a firearm, you don't have to get rid of your firearm forever, but if you're actively suicidal, let a friend or a family member know and go ahead and surrender your firearm to them. Give yourself a chance because it only takes a second. It really does. It only takes a second. Every person that kills themselves hasn't agonized over it for days and weeks and months at a time. That's really? Yeah, that's a misconception.
Explain that, because that's probably a huge misconception.
That's what people tend to think, but it only takes a moment to think, you know, I'm so sick of everything, I'd be better off not being here. Or I don't feel like anyone cares, or I don't care, I just don't want to do this anymore. And then in that moment, the person decides, and I'm not going to do it anymore. That's how that sentence ends.
Wow.
And then they take their life.
Wow. So you could actually be with your friend early that day and you hear that they took their life tonight. I would be thinking, wow, he knew the whole time I was sitting there talking to him, but he may have not.
Yeah. Wow. And that happens a lot for people. And so the people left behind are often very confused and frazzled and heartbroken and guilt-ridden. But once again, nothing anyone else could have done. And sometimes a person that has planned to the point to where they're actually looking forward to it. So they really seem as if nothing is wrong because they know after I get back from this vacation or after this party, it's gonna happen. And they feel such a sense of overwhelming relief.
Wow, wow, man.
In knowing that it's gonna happen.
Really?
Yeah. It's one of those things, suicide, it's complex. In end-of-life care, there's a such thing as dying with dignity, and I think that links directly to living with dignity. And for the person that's actively suicidal, I think they feel really injured. I think that the person can feel as if life as they know it just isn't dignified, just isn't fair, isn't easy to navigate for whatever reason. Their obstacles feel insurmountable. And they want to be able to decide. And that's why I tell people don't judge. Don't judge a person that has killed themselves. People want to determine how they live, and oftentimes people want to determine how they die. And there are several countries out there that allow euthanasia. Some allow it only for serious illnesses of sorts, but some allow it for any adult person that decides that they want to be in control over how they die.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
Let's see. I believe offhand a few places. I know Colombia, they're fairly recent. I think they might maybe the first Latin American country that's begun to
really?
Allow it.
Mm-hmm.
Belgium, Netherlands, there are places out there.
So I'm going to say this, and you may completely disagree. I just think, very opinionated, but I just don't think I don't think that should be a solution for someone. And again, I know nothing about your field. I just don't know that, I don't like that it's a solution for someone to take out their own life for the way they're feeling, mm-hmm. if there's no, when they can live a long life. I don't like that the idea that the...
Tell me more, Rob. It sounds like I'm hearing something.
Yeah, because I don't want to cross anything over here. I just don't think the government... Hey, let's put it this way. I don't think anyone out there should say to me, Rob, you know what? This is a solution, ending your life.
Mm-hmm.
And I believe that when you supply that, provide that as a service, it's now one of the solutions to what you're going through, and I don't think that's a solution. I don't. If you came to me and said, Rob, I'm thinking about taking my own life, Lola, please don't. However, mm-hmm. if you are thinking about, there's a place here on Main Street that, man, there's no way in hell. If I, I don't want my friend, my family member giving me that solution. I want them giving me every other solution not to take my own life, because life is such a gift. So I don't think that, I personally do not think that a government entity should be offering that as a solution. That's me. And again, I don't want to start any controversy.
I think we'll be having a to be continued right. on that. I will say this. I love that you say life is a gift, because I do believe it is. But I think it's what happens with that gift that gets to a lot of people, because oftentimes their life is hard. Sometimes I have met the occasional client that it seems as if, wow, they have been dealt a hand and the blows just keep coming.
Yeah.
And so for some people, it can get to be too much. And hopefully programs like ours will help people be bold enough to go out and get the help that they need if they can't automatically get it from the people in their direct circle, or if they just feel too ashamed. Hopefully they will go out and get that help, because life can really throw some curveballs at people and put them on the side of the fence that no one wants to be on, and that's feeling like you want to end it all.
Fair enough. And like I said, I have not been there. I have not been to that point, even close to that point. So I can't fully understand what that is. So fair enough on that. I just don't see it as a solution. There are people that have been through stuff, and you know, Lola, I've interviewed them on my other podcast. Yeah. I can't believe the stuff they've been through,
but they're resilient.
Yes, they're resilient, and maybe they can help. So if someone's going through some really hard stuff, let's address that right now. Someone who's watching this, who is thinking suicidal thoughts, who did find this video, what are either some of the resources? You've already given advice. There's no. Are there any resources that you want to list besides, number one, calling you? I mean, that's the, because I know you for you. Go ahead.
And we will list resources, but the National Suicide Hotline, that is definitely a great starting place. NAMI, the National Association Mental Illness, their website is a great place for resources. Also, Psychology Today. What I like about Psychology Today is that it's sort of, I don't know, it's almost like a personal ad for therapists and people in the mental health field. And for a lot of people, it's very comforting, because they can just go through and read the profiles of all the mental health professionals. And you wouldn't believe it, but I'm only saying this because it's what I know for a fact. It's really helped sustain some people over the years. Just knowing that the help is out there.
Yes.
I've had clients that I finally meet them and they say, you know, I've been going on your Psychology Today profile for 4 years.
Wow.
Yeah. And they just keep going and going back, rereading things until they work up the nerve to call. Or some will call, but they may call for 10 months straight and never keep an appointment to come in.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
And then finally, one day, they keep the appointment.
So I would say also, again, not my field, but man, if you're watching this, you are absolutely not alone.
Because
you feel like you're alone.
Yes. If you're watching this, know that you're not alone, and know that just one more day. One more day where you decide to get up and just make a phone call or send an email to someone that can help. Contact a professional, I promise, one day. That's it. Just give yourself one more day, make an appointment, no pressure on yourself, just show up and let the process unfold from there. Because life is so valuable, and what I like to remind people is that you may be suicidal today, but this exact day 1 year from now, your life can look totally different. It can be magnificent. Even if there's a chronic debilitating illness that you're dealing with, you're going to get to a point where it's under control, it's being managed, it can be better. For a lot of people, living in pain can be a contributing factor. For a lot of people, and I know we didn't talk about this, maybe we'll go into it in subsequent podcasts, but for lots of people that have been in the armed forces or played professional contact sports, traumatic brain injury is another factor that can predispose someone to acts of self-harm or suicide.
Wow. Lola, I know there's resources for people out there for grief. You know, are there resources specifically for people who are dealing with grief from losing someone from suicide?
There are, and there is so much comfort in being around those that know exactly what you're going through. I highly recommend looking for a grief share group for people that have experienced the loss of a loved one from suicide.
Excellent, excellent advice. Go ahead.
And grief share, for those of you out there that don't know, grief share is a recovery curriculum for grief. And it's largely done in a lot of churches or community centers. And so the groups are out there. You can seek online for a grief share group in your area. And also there's something that's called the grief recovery method. And so you can seek out a therapist that's certified in the grief recovery method or the Hearts Matter curriculum. Hearts Matter is a method that is specifically designed for children, people 18 and under that have experienced the loss of a loved one.
There's also someone who I know, I did a video for her. I'm gonna put her
excellent
website, yeah, because she does that specifically for children, mm-hmm. or for young adults who have lost someone in their life.
Yeah.
So that's all we have for today. I would say please on our YouTube channel or on the podcast, ask questions, reach out. Lola, is there anything closing that you want to say?
I just want to encourage everyone to encourage everyone. If we all join together and encourage one another, keep each other uplifted, things are going to get a lot better. And I know that as a mental health professional, I've made a personal vow to really, really be active in talking about suicide, suicidal ideation, and everything that goes along with it, because I want people out there to know that help is available. I want families to know that have lost a loved one to suicide, it was not your fault. Please let go of the guilt. Please forgive yourself and know that your loved one wanted to be in control of ending whatever was happening in their life. And I'm sincerely sorry for your loss. They just wanted a situation to end and to change. But you being proactive and being their voice moving forward can make a difference in someone else's life. It can make a difference in your life too. So please don't remain silent.